Hey, Shane with Hard Money, Hard Knocks, a Bitcoin podcast dedicated to shine light on Bitcoiners working hard to improve adoption in their community. Welcome to Hard Money, Hard Knocks. I'm doing this for a way for myself to connect with other meetup organizers and other Bitcoiners in general. And just broaden my connection with other Bitcoiners, just find a way to connect, learn more, see how I can improve my meetup in Knoxville, and help other organizers get more word about their group. So today we're going to be having Rick from the Kent Bitcoiners out in the UK. So across the pond, Rick, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Happy to be here.
And really quick, I forgot to do the Bitcoin price. Current Bitcoin price is $22,520. One US dollar could buy you 4,440 sats. And the current block height is 747,979. Sorry about that. So, Rick, why don't you go ahead and give us a little bit about your background, Bitcoin background, how you got started, and kind of where you're at now.
Sure. So, I work in the marine industry. I work as a marine engineer on a vessel, 2 months on, 2 months off. And with that kind of money that I earn, it's tax-free. And I got to the point in 2016 where it was just sitting in a bank account and I had no idea about money at the stage, like literally no financial literacy at all. And I just thought, well, you know, I should probably try to invest it and expand it and, you know, make my money work for me. So it kind of led me down the whole the stock market route, and I wanted to figure out how to invest. So I signed up to a platform in South Africa called Easy Equities, and basically what that was is just like a little platform so that you could start out, you could put little bits in, you could buy fractions of shares and things like that. And so I did that for a while, and my dad, who is in gold mining, kind of led me, well, I got his gold knowledge, and I used that, and basically my portfolio was quite heavily weighted into gold mining and gold stocks and things like that. And this kind of led me down the route of, you know, well, now that I've got skin in the game, you know, I'm investing in gold. Why? You know, the question was like, it's a natural question to ask, and so I kind of went down the gold route, discovered a whole bunch of gold podcasts, and learned about how gold was hard money, and you know, it's been there for 5,000 years as a good money, and then learned about the sort of 1971 thing, and that then led me down to how money is actually created and the Fed, and you know, all these kinds of things. And basically that became a super, super depressing part of my life. Once you figure out the money printing machine for the first time and you have the veil lifted, it can be pretty overwhelming and quite depressing.
At that point, you didn't have Bitcoin. You didn't know about Bitcoin either.
So not at all. Yeah. Luckily, just a fiat cuck.
Yeah. Because of the Bitcoin rabbit hole, I was able to learn about all that other stuff. So I've kind of, not to cut you off, but just the political aspect of it kind of wrapped me in after living through COVID. So that, you know, it's really fascinating that you, you know, came to that realization without even having Bitcoin knowledge.
Yeah.
Really cool that you got to fill that puzzle piece in like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I came at it from the other way around. Bitcoin nowadays kind of allows you to experience all these, or teaches you about those things as you go down the rabbit hole. But my kind of rabbit hole started the other way around. I went through the money rabbit hole and the gold rabbit hole, and then found Bitcoin. I don't remember how I heard about Bitcoin, to be honest. It must have been late 2016, probably on a news show or whatever, when Bitcoin had crashed or had gone really high or something, and I just thought, well, let me, you know, I'm investing in stocks and gold right now, let me try this. There seems to be quite a lot of volatility, and I thought, you know, I was becoming a trader now. And So I signed up to the first exchange was Poloniex at the time. Still back in those days, there was like a little chat stream down the side of the page where everyone was pumping and dumping shit coins and things like that. And so I bought, I think at the time, I probably bought about 500 euros worth of Bitcoin, and then started trading into like all the other shit coins and things and trying to just make money effectively. And so I did that for a while, was a really bad trader. Naturally, I don't think anyone can be a good trader. And so I just realized, well, okay, I'll just buy a broad sort of portfolio of cryptos, you know? So I bought some Bitcoin and Ethereum and Bcash and Dash and Litecoin and, you know, all those things. And then in 2017, the ICOs came around, the ICO craze. I got into that. You know, I think ask a lot of Bitcoiners nowadays, a lot of them will tell you their shameless shitcoin times. We've all kind of gone through it. There's hardly any pure Bitcoiners out there. So yeah, I'm happy to admit it. I made some mistakes, went into the ICOs, crashed and burned on a few of them, made some money on a few of them. But then when it all came down, crashing down, that kind of coincided with the book that you've got next to you there, The Bitcoin Standard. I remember coming across Safety in a Moose and reading The Bitcoin Standard, and that just changed my mind completely. That was the book that opened everything for me, and basically that turned me into a Bitcoin maxi. I tried to convert all my ICOs and things and all the crypto scams, and everything just changed. Mm-hmm. And everything went back into Bitcoin, and now I'm just a solid DCA Bitcoin toxic Bitcoin maximalist.
How many people I've heard say just, you know, really changed my life and my perspective about Bitcoin, and it's just such a great history of money and really informs you on some things that most people who are, you know, there's a lot of financially illiterate people. I was definitely one of them 2 years ago. So, you know, so many people would benefit from reading the first seven chapters alone of that book, you know.
Yeah, I mean, nine chapters of monetary history and then one chapter of Bitcoin and how it helps.
Yeah.
So if you just want monetary history, read The Bitcoin Standard.
Yeah.
It's a phenomenal book.
Yeah. And then, so what is your favorite aspect of Bitcoin? What rabbit hole do you enjoy going down the most? Or what are some of the top?
Bitcoin fixes this meme. That is, it's honestly my favorite. Like, it's quite funny the other day meeting that Bitcoin friend of mine here in my town for the first time. We got to talking and this came up. And he was just like, and he said the thing that I always say to other people when I try and explain Bitcoin is just like, I can basically break down most or every problem in society and break it all the way down and come to the conclusion that fiat money is the cause. And when you replace fiat money with a low time preference, deflationary Bitcoin standard, everything changes.
Yeah.
I mean, for example, like in The Bitcoin Standard, art is, you know, art comes up there. And a lot of people find this one quite a contentious part of the chapter, but I tend to agree with him. I mean, I've done a bit of art. I've been trained by some art teachers and things in school, and I tend to agree with him. Like Michelangelo, you know, painted the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. It took him 3 years to do on his meager pay, and he was able to live quite comfortably. And he had the money that he was being paid, no doubt in gold, was good enough because gold was able to hold its value over time. So he was happy to paint a ceiling for 3 years and, you know, put painstaking time into it and come out with a beautiful product that's actually lasted, you know, however long the Sistine Chapel has been up now, but I imagine it's hundreds of years. So yeah, it's one of my favorite things to go down and just sort of break a societal issue down to its basic principles and say, well, this is what fiat money does, and this is how Bitcoin can fix it.
So my question for you now is, have you read the fiat standard?
I haven't yet. I started reading it. I've read, I think, the first chapter, but to be honest, lately there's just been so many books that have come across my timeline. I'm trying to read like 3 or 4, maybe even 5 books at the same time right now. I have a kid coming, so you know, like time's just running away from me. And I right, I feel like I'll get there eventually. But my favorite form of knowledge at the moment is podcasting. These sort of I don't like bite-sized podcasts either. I don't like anything under half an hour. I feel like you don't get the full-blown, you know, what the person's trying to say in under half an hour. So I like the long format. I love listening to it at the gym or driving around or traveling or even at work. You know, my work's pretty physical. It doesn't take a lot of I don't have to read or, you know, things like that. So I can just put earphones in and, you know, get stuck in. So maybe I might get the audio version of it. And
that's what I do. I'm not the best reader. So it really benefits me listening to it. And I just imagine that I'm listening to a podcast, but it's just one guy speaking for a very long time.
Exactly. So, yeah, I'm a really terrible reader as well. I read about the speed of a fifth grader.
So not even that.
really need to work on that.
No, but what I wanted to get to about the fiat standard is, you know, for the first like half of the book that I've listened to so far, it's literally like fiat, you know, because of the fiat got this to this point, you know, like with food, with schools, with healthcare, you know, everything. Like you could really break everything down and see where fiat plays a role in the destruction of quality of service that whatever it is, you know.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, then I think maybe I need to get stuck into it a bit more.
Yeah. No.
Maybe my nighttime reading book.
I believe there's even a sentence in the book where it talks about like some people may think this is insane that I'm going to these extremes, but you know, based off of the research, whatever. And some of it's like, man, he really is just going down like, you know, fiat played a role in this and this and this and. It seems like a bit much, but when you break it down, it truly does have a role in the less quality of whatever that aspect of life is.
Yeah, 100%. The wealth gap.
Mm-hmm.
I think fiat money is the problem.
Yeah. And who have been some vital figures in your growth of Bitcoin knowledge? What podcasts do you like listening to or people talking, whoever?
Well, obviously, Safety Namus, biggest one. Have to give full credit there. Max Kaiser was one of the first ones I came across, the Kaiser Report. And I kind of religiously watched that. And he was a very, excuse me. He was a pivotal pillar for me to understand Bitcoin. He was just a lot of signal in amongst the noise. Excuse me. Jeez, I might have some COVID.
No, it's a monkeypox.
yeah, the monkeypox. That's the one, yeah. Yeah, so Max Kaiser, he was one of them. I've watched him for so long now. I love his takes on everything. His interviews are brilliant. Peter McCormack, I'm blocked by him on Twitter for some reason. I don't really listen to him much anymore, but I can't not give him credit. His podcast did help a lot. He interviewed some pretty phenomenal people back in the day. Don't really listen to him much anymore. I think there's better podcasts out there for me now. Marty Bent, him and Odell. Really, really love their podcasts. Marty Bent's emails are pretty good as well. I've read them religiously almost since day one. Preston Pish, really, really loving his Wednesday podcasts, the Bitcoin podcast on his We Study Billionaires. And also really loving Larry Lepard, Greg Foss, Luke Groman, their takes on Twitter. But yeah, I mean, podcasting What Is Money by Breedlove, it's a pretty good one at the moment as well. Yeah, I mean, there's so many. I just listen to them on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've kind of I've started my fiat job now is Bitcoin mining. So doing Bitcoin all day and then do my stuff in the evening and then with the meetups. I've honestly kind of moved away for the podcast for a little bit. But when I first got into Bitcoin for the first year plus, it was just while I was at the gym, while I was doing this.
Yeah.
I was a substitute teacher for a high school teacher. So while I was teaching, listening to stuff, I read the Bitcoin Standard. I read the book as well as listened to an audio version just to really get the full grasp of it all. And while I was substitute teaching, so really just dove in really hard for so long and just kind of been pumping the brakes a little bit and enjoying having one-on-one discussions myself instead.
So, it's amazing how you how you just thirst for that knowledge in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I remember back in the day, I just couldn't get enough of Bitcoin podcasts. I would listen to anything and everything that came across my timeline. Mm-hmm. It's just the thirst was, it was unsatiable. Like it was, or insatiable. It was, I couldn't actually believe how much I used to listen to back then.
Yeah.
But then a maths teacher once taught me something in class and he said, once you get bored of the exercises, you know your work.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I wouldn't say that I know a lot about Bitcoin right now. There's just far too much to know. But like, once you start slowing down, it means you're quite comfortable with your understanding. Like, I don't need to go down the sort of understanding how the Fed works and this and that anymore. And I'm quite comfortable now that the mm-hmm. Fed is printing money and Bitcoin fixes that. But yeah, it's just incredible.
Yeah, with how little people know about Bitcoin and, you know, the history of our money and everything. Yeah, I would say I, you know Bitcoin. I'm no genius about it and can't tell you all the stuff behind the code, every fork that's happened, all that. So yeah. I've still got a ton to learn myself. So, and that's where most people are. Most Bitcoiners will admit themselves. I still have so much to learn. I feel like I know a lot, but they never feel comfortable with their knowledge where they're at.
Yeah. Same as the amount of Bitcoin, you'll never have enough.
Yeah, hear that. So let's get into the Kent Bitcoin meetup a little bit. And why don't you go ahead and tell us kind of how that got started and a little bit about it.
Yeah. So like we were chatting before the show started, it kind of started just because I felt lonely in a world where I'm surrounded by people. I mean, got lots of friends and things around me. But I started feeling lonely because all I ever wanted to do was talk about Bitcoin and, you know, how it can fix things. Excuse me, I don't know what's going on with my throat. And so I kind of just started a second Twitter handle called Kent Bitcoin. Just threw it out there, hopefully trying to catch some guys around here or girls around here that just want to chat Bitcoin. I didn't initially start it to be a meetup or anything like that. The meetup craze actually only has started to roll in the last sort of few months, for me at least. So initially all it was to do was to just try to find some Bitcoiners and get them to come out of the woodwork and, you know, just find some friends, Bitcoin friends.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I started, while I went onto that Twitter, I sort of came across other meetups and things like that. And, you know, the only meetups I ever knew about was like the Bitcoin conference and, you know, conferences around the world. And I've really tried to go to them, but every time they come around, the dates are just in the worst place for me. And so I could never go to them. Mm-hmm. So I was really frustrated about that. And so I thought, well, okay, let me set this up and start a little meetup of some sort and see where it goes. And, you know, hopefully if I can get 5 Bitcoiners together, that's better than none. And we can just chat Bitcoin and that's it. And now it's kind of, you know, now I'd like to grow it a little bit more organically now, you know, maybe start a circular economy in my town, and hopefully grow the little Bitcoin group so that they can then branch out and explain Bitcoin and orange pill other people as they go, you know, like, I mean, it's one of my favorite things is to just go around and orange pill taxi drivers and walk into a shop and ask them about Bitcoin. What do they know about it? And would they like to use it? And, you know, so hopefully if I can gather a bunch more people, get them to pay it forward and just naturally, organically grow Bitcoin in my area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And these meetups are going to be, I believe the meetups will be such a vital role in the growth of Bitcoin, providing a place for a circular economy to build and grow. I don't know if you're familiar with Texas Slim and the Beef Initiative.
100%. I actually was just listening to him on Marty Ben today.
Okay. Yeah, so he's been traveling through a lot of meetups in the U.S., and he came through ours, and I'm really focused on trying to meet a rancher who I could buy some beef from with Bitcoin.
Me too.
Just grow a relationship like that, and just really cool, and even the place where my meetup is held at. Maybe one day with time, you know, and price action, the owner of the restaurant's like, okay, you guys have been doing this meetup long enough. You know, let me dive in a little bit, and who knows, maybe they'll accept Bitcoin, you know, sooner than others. And just so many cool aspects can happen because of the meetups going on. And yeah, like you guys over there, so many meetups have been sprouting up just this year alone, and they are just getting going. So
I think so. I think it's a really good time to start this up. I mean, it's about to boom. I can just feel it. Like everyone, the sort of meetup hive is vibrating now, and people just want to get together and, mm-hmm. and yeah.
All it needs is some really price exciting. Action, and that'll bring in some more newer people, you know.
Exactly.
I'm so eager for that. I can't wait to try to orange pill new people, provide a space where they could come and learn. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I love having a bunch of Bitcoiners there, but I want to provide a learning experience for the community that I'm around. And I really look forward to the day newer people start coming.
Yeah, well, it benefits us all. I mean, orange pilling people and getting them to orange pill and going forward, and it only benefits us to be nice, well, not nice, but like it benefits us to orange pill normies or no coiners or pre-coiners, you know, like without them coming into the space, Bitcoin doesn't really grow. And so the more people we can get involved, and you know, I always say it to everyone else, like I'm a very impatient person naturally. I'm a very efficiency driven human being. I'm an engineer by trade, so it's kind of how I am. I want everything to be the most perfectly efficient I can be. Even when I drive my car, I'm like, that's just weirdly efficient. And I always say to people when I'm orange pilling them is like, if you've got a question for me around Bitcoin, I have all the time and patience in the world for you. Like there is nothing I'm more passionate about than what Bitcoin can do for the world. And, you know, I've come through my journey and, you know, gone down the rabbit holes and understood how Lightning works and Fedimints and, you know, all these really cool things that come around. And for a pre-coiner to come in now and try to absorb all this in one go is extremely difficult. Mm-hmm. We're so early in this game. Bitcoin is not easy yet. It will become easy. It's not easy yet. And so I just say to them, like, this is the one part of my life where I have just the utmost patience. And it's so bizarre because I am naturally impatient. And yet I have this ability to be patient when it comes to this. So I just want to orange pull everyone. It's exciting.
Oh, yeah. As long as a person seems like they're somewhat intrigued by what I'm saying, you know, I will go on and on as long as they want to. So
yeah, exactly. Tell, like, I'll go for hours.
Yeah. If you know they're fading away, like, okay. Time to move on. Yeah. Yeah, the ones who you start, you know, breaking or revealing the veil a little bit with them, those are the just you know, it feels good. You know, you're doing Satoshi's work and helping something so much bigger than just number go up technology. And I you know, completely agree with that. Sounds, I bet my fiance listening in the other room is like, oh yeah, that's Shane too.
So, yeah, mine as well. She's also listening most likely. So it's almost becoming a religion.
Yeah. Like,
Bitcoin is becoming a religion to me. Like, it's actually phenomenal. Like, how it changes you.
Mm-hmm. It's I've had that conversation with several people. Like, oh, it almost makes me like religious in a way. You know.
Yeah,
like,
me too. I mean, I've never been, and all of a sudden I'm finding spiritualness and, you know, enjoying the idea of religion where I used to shun it. I've been through a phenomenal change.
Yeah. You know, not to go too deep into it, but I was like raised in Catholic church, went to private school for college. I went for baseball and, you know, just kind of, I'm also open to the idea of like decentralizing religion, you know, like, you know, like, almost like a great awakening, you know, how the great awakenings have happened and you could have a more personal relationship with your higher power. You know, and just that kind of aspect of it, you know, realizing we don't need all that. We've more, you know, decentralized life and so many different aspects of it. But, you know, Bitcoin sounds too good to be true. When you tell everybody all the great things about it, it's like, oh, it's too good to be true. And then you think about Satoshi writing the code for it and everything and all the things that he's thought ahead of time that most of us, you know, or not even most, all of us, like, couldn't. How could he have thought about that? You know, doing the difficulty adjustment and everything and just so many aspects of what Satoshi did for Bitcoin, you know.
And then just vanished.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, I believe it's God's gift to Earth, you know. It's good things happen in the world. And, you know, what other explanation is it than just God gifted a human brain with a gift that'll help fix the world? And, you know, there's just so many beautiful aspects about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing how, like, right now, I kind of think of how the world currently is. Bitcoin could not have come at a better time. And like you say, like, maybe evil has sort of had its way in the world for the last few years now, and it's about time that good starts to take a stance again and starts to gather a bit of power. And I think Bitcoin is the catalyst for that.
Yeah, but you think about how long evil has been in the world, and you think about the past 100 years. You know, like, both sides of the world wars were funded by the, you know, the same people and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's just so many odd coincidences. That's just like, there's evil behind it. You know, there's malintentions behind so many things that have happened in our world. And I believe it's to turn every country into a third world, essentially, and ruin the quality of life for people. And we're seeing that in full effect with the World Economic Forum. And it's the year 2030 and you'll own nothing. And
be happy.
Yeah, and it just...
It's neo-feudalism at the end of the day. I mean, the families that rule the world that we call the elite, and I really hate that term for them. I truly believe that... Yeah, they've been running the world for a long time, and it's the banking cartels, you know, like, control the money, control the food, control the energy, and you control the people. And I read a very interesting thread. In fact, Marty Bentz, his most recent email, I believe, or yesterday's email, there was a guy who wrote this long thread on sort of conspiratorial thinking and how people sort of shy away from wanting to go down these rabbit holes. And it's been something I've been trying to get across for a long time to a lot of friends of mine, because I am the tinfoil hat wearing conspiratorial human being, and I'm proudly one of them now. I used to hate the label, but I own it now. I'm very, very proud to be one. I don't really mind.
Likewise.
And I think for me, it comes down to, like, people just fear the label. And that's on purpose as well. I believe the conspiracy theory, which was invented by the CIA, was to deter people from actually going down the rabbit hole. And you see articles in the New York Times telling you to not go down the rabbit hole. And, you know, like, they're just, these things are put in place to get people to be afraid to get that label. And I know so many people around me in my circle of friends and things who don't even want to engage in these kinds of conversations, who get really irritated with me when I sort of bring up these topics and things. And I believe it's just fear driven. It is a form of peer pressure that stops people in their tracks from going down into these topics and, you know, discussing why the government might be bad and not good. You know, and this thread was basically just going through all of that. And it also showed, and this is something I believe of nowadays, I think the internet, which would have been probably tried to be co-opted by these elites and things to control the sort of the fourth pillar, if you will, like, you know, the money, food, energy, and the internet. And I think what they sort of miscalculated in that, whoever they are, was the fact that if you go deep enough into the internet, you're able to find things. I know it's easily controllable. You know, Twitter's got all its shadow banning. Facebook is ridiculous. Instagram is changing society. But if you go and you find your different channels and things and you actually do a bit of work, you can find the truth on the internet. It's not hard. And I think this thread was also saying how much easier it's becoming now. You know, like boomers and things that are going onto the internet and they're starting to find the truth. And it's kind of like an exponential acceleration of the truth. And I feel like once this reaches a sort of a critical mass, it's all over. And the internet, which is, you know, we can bring back to Bitcoin as well, which would be the internet native currency. This starts to take down the neo-feudalism that we're effectively in neo-feudalism. I mean, it's not kings and queens anymore. It's presidents and, you know, global elite and, you know, Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab and, you know, all these guys. They're just the new kings. Nothing's changed. We still live under a fiat burden of debt and credit everywhere and, you know, pay your taxes and, you know, where does my tax go? I don't see the benefits of that. So, yeah, it was a very, very incredible thread. I encourage anyone listening to go and check out Marty Bent's thread and read that. It's quite a long Twitter thread, but it's a very, very good read.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to check that out. Sounds like something up my alley.
I think so.
Yeah. And then back to the meetup. So, are you going to have any kind of structure to the meetup, or for now, is it just going to be kind of a social get together kind of thing? And also, where are you hosting your meetups at and how often?
So yeah, for now it's just a social thing. Bitcoin driven, obviously. But it's very small at the moment. I think I've got a Telegram group with about 20 members in there. This weekend, in fact, I'm hosting the first one. It'll be in my hometown. I can't venture very far from my hometown because my fiance is about to pop. Got a little boy coming, so I can't be very far. Thank you. So we're going to have a meetup. I think I've got 6 people coming this weekend, which is awesome for a first one. I'm quite happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
The intention is to have them about a monthly occasion, and I think as it grows, maybe we can go into like 2 weekly. And it'll only be in my hometown for now, but Kent is a county in the UK, and quite a large one, I'm thinking of just moving it to various different villages around the UK, just, you know, because people have to travel. Like one guy said he's going to come out, and it's about a 3-hour train journey for him. So, like, I was just like, well, I'm buying you a beer for that. Like, what an effort.
Well, what it sounds like to me is you have a challenge ahead of you of orange pilling other Bitcoiners to start a meetup of their own in their own hometowns. Because that's, you know, that's, and that, give us some time, these meetups will start occurring more. But what we're seeing here in the US is just a ton sprouting, even in smaller towns. Everybody is just trying to put a space together, whether it's just a social, you know, 5 to 10, whatever it is. You know, most meetups are in the 10 to 15 range. So, you know, having 6 for your first one, that's great for just getting going and not even having many meetups out there.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, it's, I think, yeah, a small meetup in every single town will do so much just for this county. And then as that spreads, the whole of the UK, maybe the UK, if I'm really honest, I think the UK is going to be one of the last countries in the world to adopt this. I have a bit of a pessimistic view. And that's, I don't say that because of the people in the UK. I say that because of the structure of the UK's political system and the red tape and the bureaucracy. I mean, the UK is the basis for pretty much all government around the world. It's a very sort of ingrained thing in this country. Mm-hmm. And so having these little decentralized meetups and things like in the US, I mean, the US, it's blooming at the moment. It's really phenomenal to see. And hopefully we can get that culture going in the UK, and that then just organically plants these little orange plants all over the UK and paint the whole country orange eventually.
Yeah. Give us some time. There will be more. So, you know, they're starting to pop up all over the place. It's just becoming a Bitcoin thing, essentially, at this point. So people get that first taste of Bitcoin community, you know, whether it be the first conference they go to, whatever. And then they come back and they're on fire, or they hear from somebody, whatever. They, you know, just there's so many ways of meetups to start. And, you know, like you said, we're seeing them here. So, and then, so you said about 6 people, and do you know, or how did you communicate with these people? Are they all from Twitter for the most part?
All found on Twitter. Yes. That's the only place. I mean, I'm no marketer or events organizer or anything. I'm just an engineer. So this is not my forte. Also, I'm a pretty toxic maximalist on Twitter. So I had to have a softer account on the side, but yeah, so pretty much everyone found on Twitter, and then I set up a Telegram group, which isn't very active at the moment, but you know, I'm okay with that. There's people there. I post a few things on there every now and then, and just get conversation going, and eventually they will. I mean, once we've met face to face and things, I figure it'll grow.
Mm-hmm. So are you familiar with the Meetup app?
I am. Yes.
So that's what a lot of these meetups here in the U.S. are using to as another avenue of reaching out with people. You could have it just, you know, set up the time and everything. It's easy. You can post that to Twitter. So I don't necessarily have a lot of success with it, but I just see other meetups have more success with it. I get, you know, a few people here or there, but like most people who come to my meetup just show up. They don't RSVP for it. So. Just another possibility for you as far as
doing all that, but I'll definitely look into that. Actually, I completely forgot about it. Mm-hmm. I did have a look at it a few months ago, to you know, when I was trying to start out trying to meet Bitcoiners. I was just actually looking for Bitcoin meetups, and that's kind of the reason I started it, was because I just couldn't find much. Mm-hmm. There was one or two in London, which I'd have to travel, you know, quite far to get to. So, yeah, I'll definitely have a look at that and just set up this one for this weekend and just get into the swing of it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the participation level's like on that app in the UK either. So, you know, maybe nobody uses it over there.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
And so since what are your goals moving forward with the group? What would you like to see happen, you know, over the next few months?
Over the next few months, I'd love it to grow organically, and basically use it as a platform to convert my town slowly into a Bitcoin town. That's probably more of a medium to long-term goal, but I'd just like the dialogue to start and get people excited about, you know, what it could do. Yeah, so just growing it, getting people interested, and then letting them spread out and sort of go and orange pill their own town and like you said earlier, decentralize the meetups in Kent and mm-hmm. have many of them.
Yep. One thing I do too, kind of get the word out, and made these business cards and then little QR codes. Oops, there you go. And just with our meetups, Twitter, our website. So just an easy way. I went to Starbucks to pick up my lady a coffee the other day, and I have a Cash App card, and I got the Bitcoin logo on it, you know, just a way to try to create conversation, that first touch with people. And the lady at Starbucks was like, oh, I like your card. What's this, you know, Bitcoin thing? So it was an opportunity to get to talk to her.
40 minutes later, yeah. Coffee's cold.
Yeah. Oh, it was a nice coffee.
Yeah. So, okay, great.
ice was melted a little bit. So I was able to hand her one of those, and that's just such an easy way, you know, okay, maybe I will go check this out a little bit more. Yeah. And so getting like 100 of those, you know, not too expensive either. So
no, I've actually thought about making cards, and I've also thought about putting flyers up in my gym mm-hmm. and maybe some restaurants and things, and you know, where people frequent the most, and just again QR code it as well. And my fiance is a website kind of developer. She helps fix people's websites and things, and so we've actually spoken about maybe setting myself up a little website for general information and hosting the white paper and, you know, all those kinds of things.
Yeah, we did one. My buddy Connor, he made one like that. So just it's KnoxvilleBitcoin.com, and you can go on, just connect with the meetups. We also have our PowerPoint slides from the meetups up there, so you could go on, kind of learn on there as well. So
nice.
You know, it's a great idea for to getting going, and just another you know, way to reach out there, and especially people go Google, you know, so Kent Bitcoin, whatever, if they're looking for a meetup. And so yeah, that's exactly. A great way, but it's definitely difficult, like you said, you're not a marketer, and trying to get the word out about the meetup, you really got to step out of your comfort zone.
Oh, massively.
I guerrilla marketing, and I put these business cards and urinals, you know, above the handle to flush and everything, or on restaurant tables, and I just try to put stuff wherever I can. So
yeah,
talking to people, I just try to talk about the Bitcoin, and if they're interested in Bitcoin, it's a chance to invite them to meet up. So
yeah, when you put 20 of them out, 20 cards out, and you get one, that's a good result.
Yeah, that's what I want. I'm here for that. So that one means a lot.
Yeah.
And then, so to kind of move away from the meetup now, what are some current projects or events in the Bitcoin space that you're paying attention to or looking forward to?
Fedimints is really, really interesting me. Just because I'm a big orange pillar, so like, doesn't matter where I go in the world, I'm always, always trying to orange pill people. And the problem with that is like, because I travel so much and I have, you know, short amounts of contact, it's either taxi drivers or, you know, someone in a shop or in a restaurant, or there's not a lot of time. And so effectively, you need to point them to an exchange. And normally I get their number and whatever, and I text them later and send them some information on where they can buy Bitcoin and things like that. But the biggest thing is like self-custody. And a lot of people are afraid to self-custody, and rightly so. It is a scary thing. Like, Bitcoin will teach you responsibility whether you like it or not. Like, you will learn. If you lose it, you lose it. It's gone. So that is an inherent fear, and I understand that. And I think this Fedimints thing is going to be, it's just going to be so good for pre-coiners or new Bitcoiners to come in and get their Bitcoin custodied with people they trust. I mean, I already do it. I do it for my parents because they're not technologically minded. They understand that Bitcoin is going to be the savior for when their pensions crash. But holding it, I found out they were holding it on an exchange, and I was just like, okay, stop right there. Just
they
send
weren't
it to
even me. Holding it.
No, they weren't even holding it. It's not your keys, not your coins. So, so I just got, I set up a separate wallet in my cold storage, and I got it to send it all over there. So now they trust me to hold it. But effectively, you know, I could rug pull them. I mean, I wouldn't. They're my parents. But you know, something like that, Fedimans, I think, is a really good tool for people to get into these circles they trust and get more technically minded or stronger Bitcoiners to help store their coins off of exchanges. And I think that's a brilliant initiative.
And is it called Fedimans or
Fedimans? Yeah.
Fedimans. And to be honest, I'm not even familiar with that. So can you explain that a little bit more?
Yeah, sure. So I don't have a great understanding of it. It's a pretty new concept to me, but what I can do is forward you to Daniel Prince's podcast, where he interviews a guy called Obi. Now, Obi was recently the guy who won or was in the final four for the Bitcoin trust that Jack and Jay-Z set up with a 500 Bitcoin to try and, you know, spread Bitcoin around the world for good projects. And Obi basically came up with these Fedimans. And what it is how I understand it, is you have a guardian custody chain. And within there, you can have, you know, a multi-signature wallet of 3 or 5 or 5 or 7 or whatever. And you have a group of Bitcoiners that are strong Bitcoiners that know how to self-custody and things like that. And the Fediment thing is you kind of hold an account, and somebody who wants to store the Bitcoin with you makes a deposit. You give them an eCash IOU, for example, which is far more secure because you hold the pristine asset within your Fediment. I don't know what they call it, like the guardian chain or whatever. And when they want to use it, they can cash in their eCash token, which is, it's kind of like the Lightning Network, or it's like a layer 3 on the Lightning Network. So they get to cash in their eCash, and they can get their Bitcoin and then go spend it or, you know, something like that. Now, I have a really basic understanding of it, but I would encourage you to go to Daniel Prince's podcast and listen to Obi talk about it. I've heard Obi on a few of them. He's on Preston Pish as well. I believe him and another guy, I forget the name now, were on Marty Bent's podcast as well. But Daniel Prince's one is the one I found the most helpful in understanding the sort of in layman's terms on how this works.
So is it essentially just going to make transacting with it other than Lightning Network essentially?
No, it's going to make storage better.
Okay.
I mean, you come into Bitcoin, you buy your Bitcoin, and you leave it on an exchange. Or you come into Bitcoin, you buy Bitcoin, you get it off the exchange, and you send it to one of your friends who you trust to keep Bitcoin. And that's, you know, a lot of people find storing Bitcoin difficult, and it can be quite daunting. And so a lot of people just generally trust an exchange or trust people to do it for them. And so what this does is it uses a thing called Chaumian mints, which is a kind of way of obfuscating or hiding who owns what. But the Fediment or whatever that circle is knows who owns what without actually having to know physically. The human doesn't need to know. And so what it is it, I think it allows, and if they lose their sort of, they lose their wallet that allows them to claim their Bitcoin back, it's a bit easier because you can go to the circle, you know these people, you can get your Bitcoin back. It's not like you've lost your wallet and then your Bitcoin's gone. And the same goes for one of the guardians, if they had to lose their wallet or something, it's a multi-signature setup. It's backed up, you know, within the guardian circle and things like that. So really what this is just going to make storage a lot better for people who don't know how to store their Bitcoin effectively.
So,
and I'm sorry, kind of like that anyone listening who does understand this better than me, if I'm butchering it, I'm sorry.
So essentially it's kind of like a larger scale multi-sig,
kind of. I think so. Just, it's kind of like a big multi-sig wallet, but like a kind of a bank.
Yeah.
And you have the tickets to withdraw your Bitcoin from there. So the Bitcoin is safe within the guardians, and you have a ticket that allows you to withdraw an IOU, for example. And that IOU isn't as valuable as Bitcoin.
Yeah, I guess there could be definitely a value for that in the future. It's just hard to see just because so many Bitcoiners take pride in self-custody. But I think the more new people who get onboarded, you know, services like that could definitely be something in the future. It's not something I would personally, you know, be interested in.
No, me neither. But yeah, I can see how to be handy.
Yeah, and most people trust the banks to take care of their money and everything. So
exactly. Yeah.
Something interesting. I'll definitely have to check that out, listen to it a little bit more. But
yeah. And another thing I'm really interested in is home mining. And you said you're in mining now, right? That's your new job.
Yep, I work for.
So what are you doing there?
Oh yeah. What
are you doing for mining at the moment? Like,
I'm plugging in machines, monitoring hash rate, all that. So getting machines up and running, fixing issues, and
it's really just awesome.
Yeah, doing all that. So
it's mining really fascinates me so much. Like I just kind of want to leave my fiat job and get into a mining job. But I mean, there's nothing in the UK at the moment, and power is extremely expensive here. So mining won't be here for a long time. But I'm kind of building a little prototype at the moment of a little space heater, and just basically getting a miner in some immersion fluid and then pumping it around a heat exchanger with a fan. And basically, I mean, when winter comes, we have to use gas to heat the water that gets pumped around our radiators. Or if you don't have that, you'll use an electric heater or something like that. And so I was just thinking, well, you know, Bitcoin mine produces heat as well as mines Bitcoin, you may as well use that heat for good.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cool little prototype that I'm working on. You never know, maybe it takes off and maybe I can finally leave my fiat mining job and go into a Bitcoin mining environment, which is the dream. I'm really excited about that. I love this kind of stuff.
It's so cool, all the creations that are happening around home miners and everything that they're doing with it, you know, from heating pools, water heaters or houses, whatever. And just what Bitcoin mining is going to transform into in the future, and just the progress that we've already made this far, and the projects that have been, you know, invented because of Bitcoin mining, and just what it's going to grow into. We just see what the energy sector is like, you know, today, what happened to the energy sector, the oil and everything, like so much stuff, you know, it booms. And I think we're just getting going with it. It's going to be really cool to see what it transforms to in the future.
Yeah, I think, I mean, honestly, home mining has me so inspired. I look at it now and I'm like, if you're in a country that has cold in the winter, it literally makes no sense anymore to not be mining Bitcoin. Like, you have to use energy to produce heat. And so your primary byproduct of your heating systems is heat. And it's not even a byproduct, that's the product. Whereas with Bitcoin mining, the product is Bitcoin. And the byproduct is the heat, which you really want anyway. Mm-hmm. So you can either be mining Bitcoin and storing sats and basically dollar cost averaging every single day, or you could, and it's not even dollar cost averaging, it's just mining Bitcoin, but paying your electric bill at the end of the month. or you could use it to just subsidize your electric bill at the end of the month. So then you know you're producing heat and you bring down your energy costs. Like it makes so much sense. I mean, for example, the vessel I work on, we have these big Caterpillar C9 generators, 105-kilowatt generator. And the Caterpillar C9 has a very unique design in that it uses, I won't go too technical here, but basically it uses the engine oil pressure to do the injection of the fuel, which is very uncommon. Normally it's a common rail fuel line and it's a little solenoid or something. It's an electric injection. But this uses an electric pilot valve to then force oil into a cylinder, and the oil, which is under high pressure, then opens up the nozzle and the nozzle sprays the diesel. And these injectors are very temperamental and they don't like being run under low load. And so what we have on board is a load bank, and it's a 60 kilowatt load bank, just to keep the engine loads running at about an 85% load. And so what we're doing is we're literally heating seawater and then burning extra diesel just to keep the generators happy and not have to change injectors at $1,000 a time. And so, I mean, we're heating, and it's 60 kilowatts, so it's a 10 kilowatt jump every time. Whereas if you put in 20 Bitcoin mines at 3 kilowatts each, you could have a much smoother curve. And it's something I was chatting to the guys at Brains, the software that manage the miners, and asking them about what it can do. And it seems for now it's not very viable, just because of the reaction times. You need quite fast transient times to get these to get the loads to go up and down, like on a vessel, you know, if the jacuzzi turns on or the anchors start to work, like it's a big power draw on the generators. And so a load bank needs to drop off pretty fast. So it's not quite feasible yet, but I've been chatting to them, and I really think that tweaking the software and figuring out a way to just pause a miner and start a miner, and, you know, hopefully something can happen there and you can actually smooth the curve out. And I did some maths, you know, tablecloth maths, napkin maths. And at Bitcoin's price of $20,000, I could bring our fuel cost for the year down by 10%. When Bitcoin goes up to its all-time high, I bring it down by 45%. It's massive. And the ROI on something like this is about 2.5 years, or maybe even 2 years, depending on the price, which is phenomenal for any kind of business to ROI in under 3 years is really good.
Mm-hmm.
So this home mining thing, it's really becoming a new passion of mine now. I really want to get into it.
Would you ever move to the US if you got a Bitcoin mining job that, you know, could support you?
I'd love to, but we are settled in the UK, and the fiance doesn't want to move. So I would love to. I'd love to set up there or even go and experience El Salvador. But for now, we're going to stay here. So I've got to make things work over here.
Yeah. I was just curious. But yeah.
I would love to, though.
There's got to be trailblazers everywhere. And if there's not much action going on there, it sounds like it's the job for Rick to do.
Yeah. Well, there's a guy I saw recently. There's a guy who set up Ireland's first Bitcoin mine, and it's in a container and everything, and they're shipping it out to go, and I believe it's going to run on natural gas, you know, flared gas and burning methane and things like that. So Ireland's got their first one, and it's about time the UK set something up like that.
It'll only be a matter of time.
Yeah,
we'll see. Well, just to wrap it up here, any kind of final thoughts on the current Bitcoin space and things that are happening around the world?
Geez, where do we start? CBDCs. We really need to come together and stop that from happening. I think Bitcoin is the answer. I honestly think that everything that's happened in the last 3 years now, is a reaction to Bitcoin. You know, I'm a firm believer that this pandemic was written in 2013. There's evidence of it. You know, 2013, Bitcoin was only 4 years old then, but the people who control the money, they're not stupid. This may be a far-fetched theory, but it makes sense to me. And I think they saw the threat of Bitcoin and they knew they had to do something. And they're throwing the kitchen sink at it at the moment. Like I think they're failing, personally, but the CBDC thing, that if that takes a hold, that is going to be extremely detrimental. I mean, you're already seeing the signs of, there's a bank, I think in the UK, when you go onto your login page or the dashboard on in your bank account, and it shows you the amount of carbon that you've been using. And if they know how much carbon you're using, they can control what you're going to spend your money on. And a CBDC, which is a completely programmable money, and you've had too many flights in the year and your carbon footprint has gone up, they stop you from buying more flights. You can't go anywhere. Your electric vehicle that, you know, everyone loves to signal that they're doing good for the environment and climate change with the electric vehicle. What they don't know is this electric vehicle can be stopped and started by a central database. And, you know, your carbon credits have gone up. Well, we're not going to allow you to charge your vehicle and we're not going to allow you to start your vehicle. You can drive on Tuesdays. You can't go to work. You'll have to take public transport. And if your carbon's too high, then you'll take a third class ticket. Like, it's extremely scary. And I think Bitcoiners know about this. Precoiners don't. Or if they do, I think they probably see it as a good thing, because it's always sold to them as convenience. You know, it's super convenient to just have an account at the central bank. Like, you don't even have to have your own bank account anymore. You'll just get direct money from the central bank. Like, and you'll be able to spend it everywhere on your phone. I mean, we're so programmed out of cash here already. Like, I mean, the only place I'd use cash is at the hairdresser or the barber down the road. They refuse to take card. They're trying to keep cash alive. Or at a car boot sale, you know, something like that. These are the only places I think we could use cash. Like right now, and I admit it, I do it on my phone as well. I just take my phone out and pay on there. Like, it is convenient. But Bitcoin can be convenient too, and the Lightning Network, and it's much faster than paying on a card anyway. So yeah, I think CBDCs is one thing that really worries me. But I believe a lot of Bitcoiners are putting their foot down and saying, no, we're not going to have it.
Me and my coworker today, we had two different conversations. One was about the CBDCs and just, you know, that happening. And then the other one, what else were you just talking about? Shoot, where is it going with this? I forget.
Something I said now while explaining CBDCs?
Yeah. I forget. I'll come back to it or something. But yeah, just, you know, having that aspect taken into consideration, you know, what can that do to price action and Bitcoin adoption when people are pushed to make a decision between CBDCs or whatever? Because, people are only accepting cash. You know, we do basically live in a cashless society. With now that I bank through Cash App, there's no Cash App ATMs around. It's hard to pull out cash. Like, I now that I don't work in a restaurant, I basically never have cash on me. But those businesses that only accept cash, when Bitcoin starts to make sense and they have that first touch, those businesses are going to be some of the first ones that we are able to onboard to accepting Bitcoin payments, because I feel that will make so much sense. They're able to save on transaction fees and not, you know, credit card fees, whatever. It's a more sovereign money. And I really look forward to the day that those kind of businesses will, you know, consider accepting Bitcoin. And those are definitely the places that I tried to, you know, ask them, oh, will you accept Bitcoin? Those places that only accept cash. Because then I could, you know, hit them with the inflation, you know, stuff. And because I guarantee that'll make sense to them. And you could save on transaction fees. You could, you know, so many different aspects of it. And hopefully with time, you know, one of them will do it.
Yeah. You know, it's really funny because I went and got my haircut the other day and I spoke to them and I said, so there's a company in the Isle of Man that's they're doing the thing called the Bolt Card. I don't know if you've seen it. And I've been in touch with them and they said, you know, if you arrange your meetup and stuff and you want to, and you need some point of sales devices and things and you want to start orange pulling companies and bars and restaurants and stuff, like let us know and they'll provide everything for free. The nice thing about their setup is they charge 1% fee. I think in the UK here everything is about 1.5, 2% and up. And an extra 20p per transaction, which is the pence, is just cents. So I just said to them, I was like, you know, what are your well, they don't have fees obviously because they only take cash. But I said, would you be interested in accepting Bitcoin? Because they're so anti-government. Like the guy that cuts his hair there, he always had a sign that he would flip when he'd flip it so that you couldn't read anything when he wasn't there. But when he was in that shop, he'd flip it and he'd say, no vaccine passports. Yes. So he's a staunch supporter of this. He went to the rallies just like I did in London. Only a matter of time. But the thing is, this is the most bizarre part. And this gave me a real sort of shocking realization as to how early some of us are in this game. They're so anti-government. They want to be – they're so anti-cashless society. They can see, you know, all these problems. And yet I asked them, you know, would you accept Bitcoin? And they said, oh, we really just – I just really don't understand it. I don't know anything about it. And I was like, wow, you know, like you've come to all these other conclusions and things throughout, you know, you've managed to use the internet correctly and yet you still haven't come across Bitcoin or haven't even considered using it. So they're going to be one of the first ones I'm going to really try to get them to understand it. I know the guy well, I always wave at him when I see him and like we're familiar face to each other now. So hopefully I can use that to get him to realize that this is going to be the best money he'll ever accept. Yeah. But yeah, that's it was really strange to hear him not understand Bitcoin and he understands all this other stuff. Like it was really eye opening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so easy to get wrapped up in like, oh, I'm behind. But you know, when you zoom out and you truly have, you know, realize what's in front of you, and there aren't that many people out there. We are so freaking early. It's I love saying, you know, I just love being able to be in a spot where I can sit back and watch the Bitcoin revolution happen in front of my eyes and be able to tell the future generations. I love the meme, like, daddy, you know, you got the old man or the dad and two kids, like, what'd you do when everything's gonna shit in 2020, and it's like I stacked sats or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, know? I remained humble and I stacked sats.
Yeah, I can't wait to be that meme. You know, like
yeah.
So
no, I'm so happy that I came across Bitcoin when I did, and I'm not late to the game. I mean, we're never late, but you can be really early, and I'm glad I'm one of the early ones.
Yeah, I'm very grateful, and I'm still fairly new. I got in February of 2021, so. You know, nice. About a year and a half in, and you know, I just had the conviction to hold through because I bought it around 50,000, and within the next month, it dumped to, you know, 35 to low 30s, 32, whatever, and just been riding it out. And yeah, it's been a wild freaking year as far as price action. I never thought I was going to see, you know, price in the teens, price in, let alone the 20 or the 20s even.
Yeah.
So I'm so grateful to be around right now and to have this opportunity, and just you know, Bitcoin's done so much for my life. And that's kind of another thing too. It's like, Bitcoin's doing so much for me. It's like, you know, there's some kind of spirituality to it, because, you know, some kind of, some higher power was able to produce this for us and gifted the world, is what I believe.
Yeah, I agree. So, I think it's so good for the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Rick, I really appreciate your time doing this with me. And I definitely feel like we will have to keep in touch. And after I go through doing meetups, and if I, you know, continue to do the podcast, I, you know, I'm definitely going to have you on, and me and you will have a good conversation, because I can tell you're,
sure,
you're my kind of guy. So, but yeah, so thank you for joining us. And why don't you go ahead and tell the listeners how they can reach out to the Kent Bitcoiners and what you got going.
Cool. Yeah. So thank you very much for having me. You can find me on Twitter. It's at Kent Bitcoin. I have a Telegram handle, which is also at Kent Bitcoin. Myself, I'm at Rickstar72. It's a really random handle, but it started in 2009, and I've just never let go. So because Bitcoin started in 2009. So yeah, that's pretty much where you can find me. Soon I'll have a website up and all these kinds of things, but for now it's just Twitter.
Right on. Well, Rick, like I said, appreciate your time doing this with me. And most importantly, appreciate you doing Satoshi's work and starting a meetup in the UK. So wish you the best of luck and look forward to keeping up with what you got going throughout your journey.
Thank you very much.
You got it. And I'm just going to say a couple more things and we'll talk here in a sec. So that was Rick with the Kent Bitcoiners in the UK. And thank you for listening to Hard Money, Hard Knocks. You can listen on Fountain App, Spotify, Apple, YouTube. And please like, follow, share, and really appreciate it. And other than that, we will be back on next week on Wednesday with Charlotte Bitcoin. So thank you for joining us, and keep stacking hard.